Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Derek Doc Murdoch. Doc was the bass player on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and the Kevin Eubanks Band, and is an incredible session and touring musician. Doc has toured and recorded with the likes of B.B. King, Natalie Cole, Aaron Neville, and Gladys Knight, to name a few. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floto the Izzo Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
What's been going on this week with you?
Man, not a whole lot. From my personal level, after four escrows, I finally sold my house.
Oh, good for you. Good.
It only took four people to sell it, so, you know.
Yeah, but did you get what you wanted?
No, I wanted to sell it on the first one.
No. I mean, did you get enough money for it?
I don't know. Who knows about that? They didn't pay me, you know. Oh, I can't retire, so no, I didn't get enough money.
No, that's true. Okay. Anyway, any new videos coming out? What's going on?
Well, nothing new quite yet, but something will be coming soon. I am heading down to Kansas City this week, so be going checking out what's going on in Kansas City.
Oh, that should be fun. Okay, take plenty of pictures and post them up there.
I will do that.
Okay. All right, well, listen, let's go ahead and we got a lot to cover tonight. Before I go to commercial, when we get back, I'm going to play a clip, a cut that Derek brought with us that just, it's a killer clip, and it's some of the best bass playing I've heard. So I'm going to come back with that, and then we'll start and we'll sit down and talk with Derek about his sound and his, well, you'll see what I'm talking about. Anyway, we will be right back. Let's go ahead and take this commercial break.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Every week, Jeff and Scott welcome heavy experts and industry mavens exploring the coolest guitars and basses, pedals, amps, strings, accessories, everything you need to rock. Sweetwater sells all that cool stuff, so listen to The Flow and then check it out online at sweetwater.com or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. Don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available too. Check that out at the bottom of every Sweetwater webpage where it says easy financing and hit the red apply now button. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying rock on with The Flow.
Hola, amigos. Hello, everyone. My name is Billy Sheehan, and I'm from the Winery Dogs, and you're watching the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
I had to put a bass, play a bass promo. Anyway, let me go ahead and start this clip. This is Confusion, is the name of the clip.
Thank you.
want to welcome Derek, Doc Murdoch, to the show. Derek, it's a pleasure. That's just incredible. You did like a whole bunch of different little things in there that are really cool.
Yeah, yeah, that was fun to do.
What were it now? We're a gear show, so I got to know, what were you using on that?
That was actually a Fender Jazz.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Fender Custom.
Ah. Yeah, what, yeah. What amp or were you going direct?
No, I was going direct on that one.
God, that just sounded that's killer.
Yeah, just straight into the board.
Well.
And man, hey, it's an honor to be here with you, Jeff.
Thank you. No, we've been talking before the show, and it's just great. It's just been a lot. It's a lot of fun, and we got a lot to cover. And James Grover is here today, too. So he was the one that brought us together.
Yes, I was.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
James.
But anyway, let's talk a little bit about you. You studied at the College of Performing Arts at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, well, let me go back a little bit. I actually went to community college. I was in the outskirts. At the high school, I was going to go to Berkeley or Howard, but my father got ill, and so I wanted to stay close to him. And we actually moved back to Philadelphia, you know, so he can get treated and stuff like that. So I wound up going to community college for a year and a half. And then, you know, just to study theory and stuff like that. And then I studied upright at the School of Performing Arts.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, because I wanted to pursue that more, too.
Oh, okay. Do you still play upright?
Not as much anymore, but I still play, you know, gigs from here, you know, time to time. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of sessions on it, too.
And you use an upright more, or do you use a fretless?
Both.
Both.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Depends on what the session is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, your career is pretty diverse. What was it more in community college that you got your foundation for theory? Because I know you were listening to a lot of stuff and you picked up a lot of stuff. We were talking before the show that you actually were picking up stuff by ear, and then later you got into the theory.
Yeah, I grew up in Philadelphia, and you know, my father, he was quite the handyman. You know, he built a stereo, and all he used to play, he used to play a lot of stuff. A lot of Motown stuff, James Brown stuff, but he would crank the bass up, mega bass. All you would hear was just bass, hardly any treble, right? I'd be up in my room, like, studying, and all I could hear is bass. So I heard all these bass lines every day. And so, you know, he would listen, he would blast it for a little while, and then after dinner, him and my mother would go upstairs and retire, and he would let me, you know, stay downstairs and listen to the headphones, you know, music with the headphones on. And I do that till I go to bed. You know, I sit there and I just, you know, listen to all these tunes and imagine I was playing bass, you know.
Oh, okay.
But that's what drew me into playing bass. And I didn't know it at the time, but I actually developed, you know, a good ear and a great sense of time, you know, just listening to that stuff all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, before I went to school, you know, I took, like, little private lessons for theory and stuff like that. So when I got to community college, it was, you know, it was easier.
Yeah, you were able to adapt.
Yeah, I was able to adapt. And so I, you know, I went for like a year and a half. And then after that, I started getting calls to play. And you know, one of my private teachers told me, "Hey man, look, you know theory, man, just go out and play. You know, you got the foundation down, your ear's happening, you know, you got a great sense of time. You know, just go out there and get in it." You know,
now, were you gigging before you went to college? Did you ever?
Yes.
Were, but what kind of stuff was it? R&B stuff?
It was R&B and rock stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And then I got into Latin a little later from this group called Mandro. They were killer funk group, but they played a lot of funk and Latin. They brought funk and Latin together and world music. So that group actually got me into funk, Latin, and world playing world music.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, well, and also, too, at that time, when you had been in college, there was a lot of merging, which, in general, in music, I think there was a lot of experimentation where you would try different things.
A lot of bass players were coming out, you know, just reinventing stuff, Stanley Clark, you know, people like that, just reinventing stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You know, back then, you know, bass was just, you know, in the background, and then Stanley came out and just blew everybody's mind by just playing, you know, solo bass.
Yes. No, I remember. I remember those records that came out, especially him. I remember him live at. I think it was at the Roxy or something, and he did schools out. He was with Ray Gomez on guitar, and God, he was doing some amazing stuff. He was using that piccolo bass.
That piccolo bass, yeah.
Now, what were you using when you went to when you got into college? What was your first bass?
My first bass was a Fender Jazz.
Cool.
And you know, I'm kind of sad because when I moved to New York later, it got stolen. So that was like, and I got to say, that was the best bass I ever had. You know, that my first Fender, you know, you can just plug it up into anything and it sounded great. You know, the wood was nice and aged. And, yeah. And it was just, it sounded incredible. So, yeah, I was pretty sad.
Rosewood neck? Was it a rosewood neck?
No, it was a maple.
Maple?
Yeah.
What do you remember what the body was? Was it alder or ash?
It was ash.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's kind of like Geddy Lee's.
Yeah.
That's what he uses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it was a pretty, was it a pretty bright, easy to pop? Were you doing that back then?
I was doing that back then, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because of, you know, Larry Graham.
Yeah.
That was one of my main influences.
Yes. So what, so you, okay, so that's what you use. What kind of amp were you using back then?
That's funny. You know, my father built my first cabinet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was quite the handyman. He built me a 215 cabinet.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and I don't remember the name of the head. It just had, it was pretty simple, you know, volume, treble, and bass.
Did he make the head for you?
No, he didn't make the head.
Well, what speakers did you have in there?
I can't even remember.
They weren't JBLs.
No, they were something else, but I just, he told me too. I just can't remember.
Were they bright? Were they pretty bright?
Very bright.
Okay, for that popping stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think those guys were using like the Showman heads with the, I'm not sure, but I think they were using with the JBLs to get that cut, because those JBLs were really bright for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
Did you ever experiment with bi-amping?
You know, not back then. I didn't even know what bi-amping was back then.
Because a lot of guys, I think in the 70s, got into that and that sound. But you were playing rock, so you were dirtying it up too, besides playing clean.
Yeah. I just started getting into the, you know, the different sounds until later. I mean, but that the jazz, it just sounded so clean anyway, so I was getting away with a lot of stuff. And then listening to Geddy Lee, he got me into playing with a pick, you know.
So you do, and now in session work, do you do both? Do they call you to play a pick, or are you mainly fingers now?
No, both.
Both?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I saw a guy, I did a session, this was years and years ago, and he was a British bass player, and he used a pick and his fingers, and he would pop.
Yeah, I see a lot of guys that do that. I always wanted to do that, you know. I could never get that happening.
It was amazing.
It was amazing, yeah.
I would normally hear somebody slap the bottom string with the thumb and then pop like boom, to boom, to
right.
Do octaves or something, and he was doing it with a pick. It blew me away.
Yeah, it blew me away, too. And I actually, the first time I saw that, it was a guy in Atlantic City, because I did all the Philadelphia stuff, playing in clubs and, you know, just practicing. I went to Atlantic City and met that guy that did that. You know, he just blew me away. He was from Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, now you were influenced by Larry Graham and Bootsy. What kind of stuff can you recall? Can you play something, some riffs that were like?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. you know, Bootsy, just a whole lot of stuff. You know, his stuff with James Brown and Funkadelic, but his stuff with James Brown, man, just blew me away. Here's one. That's one of my favorite.
God, it's just his tone is so clear. Every note, boom, boom, boom.
Oh yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah, but see, now he did. He was more notes. Did Bootsy do a lot of popping and slapping, or he wasn't really into that?
No, he incorporated it into a lot of his playing. Mm-hmm. You know, not like Larry Graham, but he, you know, he would do stuff like let's see. He would slap like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay.
And I really dug that, you know.
And now, show me a little bit of what your influence was with Larry Graham, the kind of stuff that you were doing there. Now, Stanley Clarke, where did he take that, in your opinion, where he went? Because A lot of it, I've heard that with Clark playing those kind of riffs, but he did, where did it go? I'm trying to get a feel of how it evolved, or and also your technique, how it evolved.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, he just took it to another level, you know. His stuff was just like, let me see if I can remember some of this. Oh. I can't remember the lick. Something like that.
Because he did, it almost sounded like a Rosciato. He would do like, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, yeah. That was a famous Stanley Clark lick. Or.
Now, what he's doing right there is he's using the thumb and the finger.
Yeah, now Stanley didn't do that so much, but I got that off a friend of mine called Tony Smith. His name was Tony Smith, and his father taught him a technique called the claw. His father used to play like that, and he just turned it around into like this stuff.
I'm trying to describe this, but he's basically going up and down with the thumb, and then when he needs to, he pulls on the index finger, right?
Yeah. And I'm upstroking with the thumb actually too.
Yeah, you're going up. You're picking up and down.
Yeah, picking up and down. Like.
So, Derek, for some of our listeners that might be trying to get into doing slap technique, is there some sort of exercises or a good way to start out doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, today it's just so easy to learn stuff because they got, you know, with social media, they have like YouTube, and you can go on there and learn all that stuff, you know. Yeah, just about. There's so many videos out now that you can go and learn that kind of stuff. But, I mean, it's really simple, you know. I mean, one way is just to start out like this. Right? Just hammering down like that. And then upstroking with the index finger.
So are you doing octaves there? Is that
yeah,
what
I'm just doing
you recommend
octaves.
People doing?
Yeah, you can just start out with, you know, just simple octaves, you know. You know, just simple octaves like that. I mean, there's so many different patterns you can, you know, start out with.
And is there a certain type of bass or setup on the bass that works well for slapping versus, you know, using something else?
Yeah, just about any bass, you know. But four string is a good bass to start out with, you know, because it's not a lot of strings and you can do a lot of tricks on that.
Yeah, well, you know, the jazz bass is the one they all use for that.
That's the jazz. That's right. That's
I mean,
right.
Some guys use the P bass, but the jazz bass is a brighter.
Yeah, a lot of people started on jazz. I mean, Larry Graham got everybody started on the jazz, you know. But, I mean, you can basically do it on anything. P bass, I mean, so many basses now you can just mess around with.
And what strings do you use to get that bright sound?
Well, in this particular bass, this is a Ken Smith five string. So I use Ken Smith strings on this only because the they just last longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what do you use on your jazz?
On my jet, I'm laughing because we were talking about this earlier. I use Roto Sounds.
Mm-hmm.
I use just had a senior moment. Dunlaps.
Dunlaps.
Yep, and every now and then I'll use some DRs, fat beams.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Marcus Miller signature.
Yeah. Now I want to point out real quick, and then we'll get more into your gear. You're using a thing called a fret wrap on there that actually. It stops a lot of the. Can you explain a little bit what you're using that for? Because you said it really cleans up your sound.
Yeah, it's just basically a muter, and the guys at Groove Gear turned me on to this, And all it is just you just put it around your neck, and you can adjust the tension. And you, with the right amount of tension, and you can do like some crazy slapping on there, and you can keep out all the unwanted noise, you know.
Take, let me take a picture of it. But pull it off and let if we can hear it without it so you can see what the difference is.
Okay. Now, I don't know if you can hear that, but there was like a lot of sloppiness in there.
It sounded pretty clean to me. You got it down. So,
yeah.
All right, now he's going to put the mute on.
So I'll put the mute on, and all it does is just get rid of that stuff.
Yeah, that's a lot
clearer. Yeah. Now, if I would have did that without the, it would have heard all kind of.
Yeah. It's amazing because he still gets sustained from the strings. It's not really deadening. You would think it deadens the strings, but it's not really.
Yeah, with the right amount of tension, you can get it just right, you know.
Now let's go back. Now you had gone through college, and now your first gigs where you're playing live. What were you using? Were you using basically at that time the jazz bass and amps, and then let's talk about what you ended up. Let's kind of go through and see where you evolved, like with the Tonight Show, and now where you're gigging, mm-hmm. how your system and gear has changed.
Okay, well, I started. I think my first cabinet was a PV215.
Okay.
Yeah, with the head too. Mm-hmm, I think mm-hmm. you know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I played that a lot in Philadelphia, and a little bit in Atlantic City. When I moved to Atlantic City, I was still playing that a little bit. And I'm trying to remember acoustic. That's what I had.
Acoustic game, yeah.
Yeah, I switched to
the 360 with the big 18
folded
horn.
Yeah. And, you know, Jaco got me into that, so.
Yeah.
And then I actually had the Ampeg SVTs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went through that, you know, the big refrigerator. I got some muscles with that one.
I presume you had some people help you lift
Absolutely,
those.
Absolutely, yeah.
Those things are killer.
Yeah.
So, but on tour, that's what you use the big stuff. Did you still use smaller amps for clubs?
No, I was using that stuff.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't touring yet. I was just playing in Atlantic City at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those casinos over there, they had their own back line. So I was actually playing a lot of different stuff. I didn't really dig a lot of them until they came out with the SWR cabinet.
Mm.
Yeah, I was kind of
that's the one you liked.
Yeah, because it had the horn in there, so I was getting the nice lows, tight lows with the highs.
But you never tried mixing cabinets like using a 410 cabinet with a 18 or a 15 or something.
Yeah,
like
not
that?
Till later.
Okay,
know, not till later. You know, when I started messing around with the SWRs, I had the 410s. And then I started mixing those up a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then there was a Gallien Krueger. I didn't really dig that much, you know, at the time. I'm trying to remember what bass I was playing.
It wasn't the jazz. You had lost the jazz by then, or were you?
Yeah, I lost the jazz by then. And I think at this time, at that time, I had a Stuart Spector. Remember those?
Mm-hmm. That brings back memories.
Yeah. I mean, I've been through a lot of basses. Stuart Spector. I had a Rickenbacker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stereo one.
Did you ever get a Lembic?
Oh man, yeah, I did actually. And the reason why I'm going through all that is because I got a dislocated shoulder from that.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, they were heavy.
Yeah, they were very heavy. And I was playing with a group at the time that was doing a lot of choreography. So that's what got me with that. I had to get rid of that mm-hmm. eventually. Yeah, I had to get rid of that. That was a great bass, though. I mean, I you know, when Stanley came out with that sound blew me away.
Well, he used the Piccolo, right? So he had a lighter one.
Yeah, well, at first he had the...
The standard?
Yeah, the standard one. He didn't play the Piccolo till later. But he played the standard one all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the one I saw was in... a store in Philadelphia, And I dug it because the neck was so long. It just blew me away. I'm like, I got to have that. You know? I'm going to look cool with that one, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I got dislocated shoulder. I'm like, okay, I got to get rid of that.
Oh, okay.
It's time to get rid of that.
Well, what's a good base for jumping around? Like a Fender? Was the Fenders pretty
Fenders
light?
Fenders was, yeah, Fenders. Okay. It's funny, man. I you know, through my career, I played a lot of expensive basses, and I always come back to the Fenders. Mm. Always. Fender Jazz, Fender Precision, till I die.
Yeah,
now,
yeah, know? No, they're still the go-to standard.
It's pretty amazing, you know. I look at all these basses, and I'm like, why did I do that?
Well, and we were talking before the show, we were talking about Rickenbackers. I have a Rickenbacker, too. And then we were talking about a session. I had done a session with the Rickenbacker, and the piano player was using a really bright Steinway. And I lost, the bass got lost in the mix. It just, the harmonics were so similar with, you know, with the Rotosound strings. You got that really bright sound, but it sounded too much like the piano. It would get buried. And we ended up using a P bass. The studio had one, so I redid the part with the P bass. And it had its own little pocket where it was, you know, and it just cut through. And I remember even earlier, before you, Kevin Eubanks was on the Tonight Show, they used to use, he used a P bass, the other bass player that was on the Doc Severinsen's. And he had that, used to come, they used to like zoom in on his bass, and it was a P bass, and it just cut, it just had that tone. So it did it right, and it just worked. You know what I mean? Now you use this is a 5-string, and the picture we put up was a 6-string. What's the tuning? That's a low B.
Yeah, this is a low B.
And
yeah.
What happens on the 6-string? The 6-string. What are the
that goes to a C. Okay. So it goes from a low B to a high C.
Oh, so you have one up on the top, yeah, and yeah, one on the bottom.
One on the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was built for me by a guy named Shaw. And the name of his company is Shaw Guitars and Causeway Basses. Mm-hmm. He's from Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He makes great basses. As a matter of fact, he's getting ready to build me another 6-string. Because that particular one you saw, the neck was a little bit too big for me. And it was really hard to get around on it. And so he's going to make me one with a smaller neck and a nice 5-string. Now, be on the lookout for his basses. He's got some really nice stuff coming out.
When you use the 6-string bass, a lot of people use the 5-string because they like that real extra low-end thing. Mm-hmm. But on the 6-string, is that more what your preference when you're doing, like, in this cut that we played where you're soloing and doing a lot of stuff, you find that you need those extra strings for that? Or what were you using on this cut?
That was a 5-string.
That was a 5-string?
That was a 5-string. And for that particular cut, you know, I would just play that. But for soloing, I might use a 6-string.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. For general set, well, for the, well, let's talk a little bit about the Tonight Show. What did you use there? Did you use multi, you know, like a 6-string or 5-string, or basically the 4-string?
No, just
string?
4 and 5.
4.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm sure the jazz was sitting there all the
jazz time. Was there, man.
And
jazz and precision.
Oh, okay.
And I played this a lot too.
Okay.
But Kevin really liked the sound of this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what did you use amplification on the set for doing that?
We, by the time I got on there, they were doing in-ears. When the show first started, they were, you know, they had amps and stuff, but I guess it was too loud, so they switched to in-ears.
Okay. And, so you were just going direct?
I was going direct.
But were you using anything, any effect, like a preamp or, you know, something to color the sound a little
bit?
Yeah,
they had an SWR preamp there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that was pretty much it. It's pretty basic, you know.
So you weren't, you didn't use a lot of effects then. You were pretty.
I did use some effects. I used chorus, you know, octave divider, reverb.
Okay.
Yeah, boss pedals, you know.
Now that's an interesting gig because you're, you know, all those different guests, a lot of different music.
Mm-hmm.
Did they, you know, if they had a situation where they wanted you to play a fretless, did they give you notice, or you just kind of winged it with what you had? Or did
no, they would let you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you had to learn this stuff pretty fast, right? Or did you have much rehearsal time?
Yeah. As far as the regular tunes that we do during the commercials, you know, there was a book there, you know, with over 300 tunes there. So we just pulled those out. He just picked like five tunes, and we would do those.
Right.
And it's funny, you know, in the commercial, you just hear this regular top 40 tune, but when the commercial comes on, that tune might turn into a jazz tune or a Latin tune.
Yeah.
You know, it goes around the world before the commercial comes back, you know.
Yeah. Well, you guys would keep playing for the audience, right?
Yeah, we keep playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then at any given moment, Kevin will go like this, you know, meaning swing it. And then we're swinging, mm-hmm. you know, or he'll just go into a Latin or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. whatever he, you know, wants us to do.
Now, what happened with the guests? Did they bring charts or did you have to do head charts?
It was different. You know, some people bought charts. I know we did a thing with, I walked in one day and there was big band there, you know. And, you know, I'm not a great sight reader anyway, you know. I had to really get my stuff together to you know, do that stuff. So, you know, I walk in and there's this big band. I'm like, oh, no. You know, right?
Yeah. No, did they have charts or they basically?
No, yeah, there was charts. There was charts. You know, I sat down there and boom, there was a chart, you know. And but, you know, it was an easy tune, so I got through it.
Oh, that's cool.
But I was just so nervous.
What was?
Do you have any? Oh, go ahead, Jack.
No, you go ahead, Scott.
Do you have any stories of like a time where it was like a super challenging show or something that just kind of funny happened?
well, yeah. I mean, each day was challenging. You know, just trying to be aware of what was going on musically, and what was going on with the band. You know, when I first got into the band, I was just like, you know, kind of intimidated because I was playing with these really great players, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every day I got to come in and it's like, I got to keep up with these guys. I got to keep up. Got to keep up, you know. So, you know, yeah, some days were easy. Some days were hard. You know, some days you come in there, it seemed like it lasted like 3 minutes. You know, some days you come in there, it's like 3 days, you know.
Yeah. What was the most bizarre guest, not the guest, but I mean musically for you to do? It was probably really taxed you just had to be super creative and really, you know, something most unusual that you would consider unusual as a bass player.
You know, you know, all that stuff was pretty easy for me, but there was this one guest in particular, I can't remember his name, but a real heavy set guy. I think he's deceased now, but anyway, we came in and the tune was real easy, but for some reason the sound was all messed up. Mm. You know, and so I couldn't hear the turnarounds, I couldn't hear the changes or anything like that, and
this is with all the in-ear,
this is
right,
yeah, with all the in-ears and stuff, and I don't know why that was happening, but me and the keyboard player, I mean, we just couldn't figure it out, so we were like guessing up there, you know, so that was a little frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh man, how are we gonna get through this, you know? And so we had about three rehearsals and it was all like that for the rehearsal, but by the time the gig started, you know, everything was cool. They straightened
everything out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was like really frustrating because I was like, man, is that gonna happen when we really play?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But they always get it straightened out by showtime.
Yeah, yeah. No, they know what
yeah.
When airtime comes, it's sacred.
That's
it's
right.
Like, that's
right.
It.
It's done deal. Everything is fixed.
Now, how did that let's compare a little bit. You playing live, because you've toured with a lot of different people, the Tonight Show, and then in general session work that you're doing now. You're doing a lot more. You're playing on people's records and stuff. How is it different? What how do you, you know, did I know, I'm sure the live performance, all the gigging that you did, just kind of prepared you for anything, and on the Tonight Show, pretty much everything's thrown at you.
Right.
So, but in terms of tone and sound, did you? I mean, I would presume since you're going direct when the Tonight Show, it's pretty much all in your hands and the bass itself.
Mm-hmm.
With your sessions now, do you play? Do you go to a gig? Are you in a studio, or do you do it like a lot of session guys now? They Skype it.
Yeah, I do a lot of that. I accumulated a lot of those sessions from the Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, through some endorsement photos, people saw me on like a TC Electronic mm-hmm. site and called me up out of nowhere. Hey, do you do sessions? Because I guess they saw like some videos I did or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll call me up that way. So I've been doing a lot of online sessions, you know, as well as, you know, in the studio.
Now, when you online, you at your place, are you using amps? and mic it and send it through the board, or are you just going direct?
Both.
Oh, okay.
It depends on what the you know, what the person wants.
Okay.
You know, I ask them, do you want direct sound? Do you want a, you know, bass, or do you want both? And they'll just tell me.
Now, what are you using amp-wise in your studio? Smaller amps?
Smaller amps, and this too sounds great.
This little Roland Cube 60 bass,
mm-hmm.
60 watts. I mean, he has it turned down because we can't get loud in the studio,
right.
But that thing's got plenty of power. It's very nice.
Yeah, and I thing I love about this too, this has a couple of amp simulations on here.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I've got it set on studio, so you know, nice clear sound.
Well, actually, let's take a listen. Do you any other particular sound that you use on there? Let's take a listen to it.
Lately, I've just been staying with the session sound, but yeah, let's check it out.
It's a cool amp. I mean, it's small. It's a 10, I think a 10-inch speaker.
Yeah. All right, this is the session. Let me put my glasses on because I can't even see this stuff. Yeah, I'm old. This one is called TE. This is a little bit more mid-range.
Yeah, it's punchable.
Yeah. And this is called B, man. A little darker. This is called flip top. This is called super flat. Oh, that was super flat. Here's a flip top. A little darker.
Yeah. Now he's not using a lot. He has a limiter, mm-hmm. that he has a Boss limiter, I think.
Yeah, and I'm only using that right now because the you know, the strings are kind of dead, so it just brightens it up a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's going directly into that amp.
Yeah.
Now, did you have any say in those sounds, or that's just the standard? One of those,
yeah.
And you mm-hmm. just...
Yeah, you that's just, why I got it, because it had all those different tone variations, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, man, I got to have that, you know? So yeah, I use this, and mainly I use TC Electronics stuff. Excuse me.
And the... okay, for recording in the studio, but what do you use TC Electronics as a...
I use that in the studio and live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how many watts is that head? Is that a like a 200 watt or something?
450 and 800.
Oh, wow. Now, do you in the past too, when you were using, did you ever use bi-amp?
Yeah.
Okay. What did you think? Did you like it, or did it really, cuz it kind of came and it kind of went?
Yeah, I know. It was cool when I finally found out about it. I was digging it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so funny cuz back then, you know, back in the day, I didn't know anything about that. And a couple of people said, do you know you were, I did a couple of gigs, and afterwards a guy came up to me, do you know you were bi-amped? I'm like, really? And then he just explained the whole thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that sounded pretty good, you know?
Yeah, no, it was, I remember it was really popular. I think, well, no, actually, there was a cut I remember Marcus Miller did. It was a great, I think he was signed with Geffen at that time, and it was the monster sound. I heard he used both an amp and direct, and they mixed it together because
mm-hmm.
it was growling a lot, and I've never heard that direct.
Right.
You know? Did you ever use any of those little studio preamps? I think Mark Bass was one of them, and Woodman? I think it was Woodman or something. Or Walter Woods.
Walter Woods, yeah. That's the small one.
Yeah. A lot of session guys were using it, and they're really tiny guys, but they had an interesting tone to them. They had a different sound.
Really tight sound. Yeah, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but the Cube and the TC Electronics are the main amps that you use.
Yeah.
Any interesting preamps or anything that you use when you go direct? Are you using one of the, like, I know there's an SVT preamp or anything like that, or any type of...
I was just using one yesterday. And you got to excuse me. I've been having senior moments all day today. man, it's like one of my favorite preamps, and maybe I'll remember it by the time this session is over.
Okay.
Because it was funny. I did a gig in Sacramento, and it was weird. The guy had it there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, he had a Galleon Krueger, which I hated, but then he had the preamp there. I'm like, okay. I was okay with that because I knew it was going to sound better, you know. Mm-hmm. And it did, you know, when it came through the monitors and everything, it was perfect. I used more of the monitor sound with the preamp than the amp. Mm-hmm. I just had the amp up slightly just for, like, you know, bass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, the TC, is that's solid state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any? I mean, you're using solid state. I don't know if that's out of necessity, or do you like tubes? I love tubes.
You know, I love tubes. It just so happens that you know, TC Electronics, man, they're just way ahead of their time. You know, they have tube simulators and they sound pretty good to me. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, they have a switch where you can actually turn it and it'll sound just like you have tubes.
Oh, okay. So there is a simulator on your mm-hmm. amp
yes.
that uses that.
Yes, as well as a tuner and a whole bunch of other stuff. Presets. You know, they have three presets where you can just set your tone and press the button and save the tone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you because another thing with the tube amps is that you can get that growl a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I played the our promo thing. We played Billy Sheehan, and he has a pedal that he mixes in with to get that growl. But do you use anything else do you dirty it up a little bit when you play live?
Yeah, I like to dirty it up a lot.
So what do you do? You just crank the amp, or are you using some type of device to distort it?
Roland just came out with a new pedal. And it's kind of like a distortion preamp pedal.
For bass?
Yeah, for bass. And, mm-hmm. and it's killing. And I've been using that a lot lately.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that so you do you your system live is usually well you're are you you do you bring your own gear, or they usually supply the gear with you when you play live now?
Depends on the gig, but mostly, you know, if I'm doing a lot of gigs in town, then I'll bring my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a lot of, you know, TC pedals, TC Electronic pedals, and Roland pedals, and you know, a lot of distortion pedals, reverbs, I mean, all kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Loopers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just all kind of stuff.
Is there any guitar pedals that you use, or more commonly used for guitar, that you use for bass? It's kind of like a little secret trick.
You know what? No, not yet.
Well, actually, is that a bass compressor?
Yeah, this is, well, yeah, kind of limiter.
Okay, so he's using a bass limiter.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And that's just on just a little bit. I don't even have that on a lot. You know, I'm just mainly using the enhancer.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you're okay.
Yeah, because I actually have a compressor, and I wasn't a real big pedal compressor guy at first. And Donna came out with this really nice compressor pedal.
That mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that the 5-knob white one or whatever?
Exactly.
I don't remember. What.
Yep. Exactly. Oh,
okay. That's the one that Billy Sheehan swears by too.
Yeah, it's a really good pedal. You know. I mean, the first one I've ever played that I liked. You know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because okay. I really didn't like all the compressor pedals that were out.
Yeah.
It was always something missing, you know?
That one's similar to, if I'm correct, like the Wampa, where you can mix the dry in so you can still get the transient, but it gives you a little more of the beef, right, if I'm correct, on that pedal?
Yep.
I think that's one of the things. Because a normal, regular compressor pedal, you just, especially the kind of percussive things that you're doing, it'll lose a lot of that.
That's
but
right.
If you can mix that in,
mm-hmm.
and Scott has the Wampler compressor.
Oh, yeah?
The Ego compressor.
Yeah, and it has that, you can blend in the straight sound straight through, so you get the transients, but you still get a little more of that meat from it.
Yeah.
So, but the, anything else particular in your setup that you use, or when you're playing, when you're doing a session and you're Skyping, is there anything else that you're using in the chain? Any type of preamp, a professional preamp or anything for your sound? Or
no, basically, you know, I'm fine with the pedals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, when I was living in Burbank, I had a pretty nice little setup. But right now, I mean, with the pedals I have, I can get some really nice sounds out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I got everything from vibrato pedals to, you know, like I said, reverbs, and just a bunch of stuff, you know. Different kind of octave dividers,
mm-hmm.
Synth pedals.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And what I really like is this thing called it's by Roland, it's called the GR55, which is a MIDI unit.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, do they make? I know that's the GR55 was primarily for the guitar. They made. Fender had a Strat, but do they have a bass?
Well, what's so cool about it, and what a lot of people don't know, there's a switch on there that you can actually switch to a bass.
Oh, wow!
And then you got all these bass sounds on there, and you can manipulate the sounds. You can, you know, tune them any way you want, man. So I got like all these killer synths, you know, stuff.
Right, right.
I got like amp simulators on there, man. I can get, you know, SVT. Thank you. SVT. You know what? I think I'm hungry, man. Anybody got a burger or something? Scott, man, you got anything over there to eat?
Not in this particular room, no.
All right. Anyway, I mean, this thing is so versatile. You know, I get a lot of sounds out of there, too. There's a killer Music Man sound in there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean.
So they're modeling all the amps. Because I remember for guitar, they had a violin thing that it sounded really cool. Eric Johnson does it with a volume pedal, but it was actually like a Boeing type of a sound.
Mm-hmm.
But does Roland make a pickup for the bass? I've never seen that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
It's usually like at NAMM, they always have the guitars. I've never seen a bass.
Yeah. So they have one for the bass, and they actually have, they came out with one, and then they came out with a thinner one. Because the other one was a little bit more, I guess it just got in the way. But I wouldn't be able to put it on here, but it fits perfectly like on Fender Jazzes and Precisions and stuff like that.
Do you have it on your jazz?
I do.
Now, did you ever use that on The Tonight Show?
I did a couple of times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because there was a couple of times where they needed like synth bass. And so I just played like synth bass on there and nobody even knew the difference.
Well, no, I mean, a lot of guys use those to do the... Or else it's the Taurus bass pedal. I know Geddy Lee uses the Taurus.
Yeah, well, the Tonight Show, when you're playing with bass and you're also playing along with an organ or a keyboard sound, you really have to make that bass come alive because that organ would take away...
Well, that synth bass type of thing, that's got a punch. Got a punch. And Roland does have a good... It gets that Moog sound. Like,
man, and it tracks so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really tracks well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you, when you're playing a lot of fast lines...
It's right there.
It's right there. It follows you.
The other thing I like about that thing, it makes you play correctly. Yeah. You know, I mean, you can't... I mean, it'll just catch everything you do. You know?
Yeah,
so you got to be careful. You know, you got to play...
You have to articulate those
exactly,
notes.
Yeah.
Well, we're almost out of time. What... I want to ask you real quick, what are you looking for now in the future? Is there any particular bass or any particular thing you want to do or sound, amp, whatever? What's on your wish list?
I'm pretty satisfied with the amps that I have. You know, I do like Epiphone. They have especially with this Ken Smith, it really sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can get the real fat sound, nice round sound with the crisp highs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot. Right now, what I've been working on, I've just been working on an app. I got an app out.
Yes, I want to talk about that. You can look up on the App Store and just look up Derek Murdoch, and you'll see this app. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, actually, I had it. He said, "Go check the app," you know, because I was preparing my notes for the bio and stuff. But I actually had the app. I got it a long time ago. I got it. I don't know if it's free or you.
It's free. Yeah,
it's free.
So anyway, but it has his bio on there, and he lists things and gigs he's doing. There's photos of some of the sessions and things that he's doing. It's really a cool app. It's well thought out.
Well, thank you so much. It's just a modern day resume website, you know. And I got the blog on there, so you know, I'm planning on doing 3 CDs. I had a friend of mine that died. His name was Jeff Lee Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really great guitar player, man. Played with George Duke to Esperanza Spalding. But he passed away. He was going to help me co-produce my CD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but when he died, you know, I kind of got depressed a little bit. And I didn't, you know, I just kind of let it go to the wayside. I didn't want to do any music at the moment. But I'm using this app to stop grieving about it and just put the CDs out, and then I'll talk about it on the blog, you know, let people know the progress of it,
mm-hmm.
and just dedicate it to him. You know, I'm using that to just get off my butt and get it done, you know. It'll have the blog on there, and I'll be doing a bunch of stuff on there. I'll have contests on there and stuff. You know,
now, is that that's available for the iPhone, but is it also available for Android?
Yeah, it is.
So it's on Android, too.
That's right, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
This clip that we played at the beginning, Confusion, is that from this new stuff that you're doing? Is this
Yeah, that's actually a sample track on the app. you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's actually a watered down version. It's going to be a lot more to that when the track is actually finished.
Well, you have to finish this album. Yeah, I'm going to be bugging you now. Because this
stuff, we need
to hear more of this type of stuff.
Absolutely,
this is killer stuff.
Yeah. I plan on putting three CDs out. I'm going to put the bass CD out with that kind of stuff on it. The second CD will be like R&B rock kind of stuff, dance kind of stuff. I'm trying to make some money on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third CD will be just like movie score type stuff, world music kind of stuff. I don't even know what kind of genre it's called. It's just going. I'm just going to throw a bunch of stuff.
Just
on
mix it together.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to point out, Doc and I, we're good friends and stuff. We're both endorsed by TC Electronics, and we both use it. And the tone print of TC Electronics, Doc has done a couple of programs for your listeners who use TC Electronics for bass. They can download the sounds that Doc has done for TC Electronics as
well. Yeah, that's what I was saying. TC, they're really ahead of their time, man. Check out Tone Prints if you get a chance. Go to TC Electronics.
Tone Prints. And also too on your app and on your Facebook page, post a picture of that bass with that pickup, that the Roland pickup on.
Oh, okay.
I want to see that. I really want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and one suggestion is post up more of your different basses and stuff that you have on your app.
Actually,
you have some great pictures, but I mean, I'd love to see more of your stuff.
You know, I actually, if you go to the photo section of my Facebook page, I actually do have a folder with a bunch of basses that I play.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you can actually go there and see those.
Okay.
But most of the pictures that I have with the pickup on it was I had it on the Sadowski at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just recently changed it to the Jazz because I just like the sound of it, you know.
Oh, okay.
I always go back to the Jazz.
Okay, well, listen, everybody, check out that app. And they're both on, Derek and James are both on Facebook.
That's correct.
Anything, any other site or for you that you have that you want to point out?
Well, you know, my social media, I just keep it at Facebook right now. Just keep it simple. You know, if you guys want to hit me up, you could either hit me at ubankstech@gmail.com because I'm Kevin Eubanks Guitar Tech.
Yeah.
Or you can just hit me up on Facebook at James Grover.
Well, thank you, guys. We're out of time. As I told you, it goes fast.
Yeah, you're right. It did. It went quick, man.
All right. Then we're going to let them jam and take us out. And, again, thank you, guys. It was a pleasure having Scott. I will see you next week. Have a great week.
Yeah, we want to thank Sweetwater.
Yes, Sweetwater.
Which, by the way, all that TC Electronics stuff is available at Sweetwater.
And I think some of these basses are, too. So I know the jazz bass is. So.
Yeah.
And maybe we, you know, just ask for the Doc Murdoch model. I'm just kidding. Anyway. So, all right. Well, listen, everybody, have a great week. And thank you, guys. Go ahead and take us out. They're going to play. And we'll keep you posted on his new CD when he gets that one out. I'm going to nudge you for that.
Right on, man.
Good night, everybody. Wow.